So what is specific legislation? And it's actually a much broader concept than, you know, the actual legislation that, you know, we think of. It includes specific legislative proposals. It also encompasses foreign legislation, so it's not only domestic but foreign. I think that can present some particular challenges because, you know, internationally we don't always know what is and isn't legislation. So, you know, sometimes it relies on working with folks who have a clearer understanding of the process, the legislative process in those countries. It also includes appropriations legislation. And sometimes, you know, I've certainly worked with organizations who aren't aware that appropriations legislation and in advocating for, you know, funding in the budget would actually result in lobbying. But, you know, technically it's appropriations legislation is legislation that gets passed. And so if you're reflecting a view and you're communicating directly with legislative officials, then you need to treat it as lobbying. Tax bills, Senate confirmation, legislative resolutions, treaties, and ballot initiatives, as I mentioned, in those cases, they'd be treated as, you know, communications around those with the public would be treated as direct lobbying. So, you know, after thinking through, you know, whether or not, you know, communication is or isn't lobbying, there's also a consideration as to whether or not, you know, the communication would qualify for an exception. And so certain communications may look like lobbying, but they might be done in the context of a larger communication that meets an exception under the tax laws. There is an exception for nonpartisan analysis, study, and research. And so I think you'll often find that organizations, foundations, you know, can fund and like reports. And these reports can even present, you know, or take a view on a position so long as they, you know, provide like a full and fair exposition of the facts that enable someone to reach an independent conclusion. So
I'll pause on that. I work a lot with non-lawyers. I tell them there usually needs to be a thunk test to this report. Like these types of reports often written by our national think tanks that are bipartisan. When you see a one-page white paper, that is not going to qualify. I'm just put that out because the program staff are going to try to say, well, you know, it had like a paragraph, and that I don't think is what they intended by these. But if you do like a blue ribbon commission, it's by like Brookings and AEI and a bunch of the big DC think tanks that may in fact apply for these exceptions. And as you point out, they can actually make as long as they talk about both sides of the issue, they can actually recommend a specific legislative proposal in the end of the report.
Yep. And you want to make sure that it's, you know, distributed widely and broadly. So, you know, if you do take a position, you're not then just distributing to all the individuals who you know share your position. But instead, you are really engaged
in. We usually recommend putting it on a public website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is easy enough to do. So that's one exception. There's a subsequent use rule. Again, we won't go into all of these nuances. Sometimes what is a nonpartisan communication ends up being a grassroots lobbying communication if this subsequent use rule applies. And when foundations make grants to charities that, you know, for nonpartisan analysis and research, and then those charities do end up, you know, using that nonpartisan analysis and research for grassroots lobbying purposes, the foundation isn't necessarily on the hook if the primary purpose wasn't for lobbying and it had no reason to know that the charity would engage in lobbying. There's also an exception for technical advice, and here, you know, that needs to be written, a written request from a governmental body. So sometimes, you know, it might be easy to respond. An individual legislator calls a charity and says, hey, we'd love you to speak. And oftentimes charities want to rush to the opportunity. Well, foundations wouldn't be able to provide funding for that because that would be lobbying. Instead, you really need to meet each of the elements for this technical advice exception, which requires a request in writing. It requires the request to be made from the government body or government committee in its entirety. And the response needs to be made to all of those members of the body or the government committee. Similarly, there's a self-defense exception. There's also, you know, as Liz mentioned, the lobbying rules don't pick up lobbying around administrative regulatory matters. There's also an exception around jointly funded projects between a foundation and legislators. There's some specific rules there, which I won't go into. Foundations, you know, they are prohibited from engaging directly or funding charities to engage in those activities directly, but they can still provide funding to charities. Now, as I mentioned, charities can engage in lobbying, and foundations can make grants to charities, even knowing that those charities are engaged in lobbying. There are a couple of ways that they can do so. One is through making a general operating support grant. In that case, of course, they can't actually earmark their funds for any lobbying, and the charity really just needs to have control and discretion over the use of funds. They can also rely on this multi-funder project grant rule, which is a useful exception and certainly allows a foundation to provide funding for a specific project of a charity that, you know, actually does involve lobbying, so long as this project grant rule applies.